And yes, indeed, it is I, Charles Moskowitz. Thank you for joining me, everyone. 617-396-4958 is the number if you'd like to join the program by phone. 617-396-4958. You can also send a chat message at rumble.com/Moskowitz. And we shall read those over the air. I want to thank my good friends over at TECN-TV, the Exceptional Conservative Network, Ken McClanton in particular, for carrying the program. It's been a very interesting week. I am really disciplining myself to do the program every day at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I've gotten through my first week with a great lineup of guests. And the show is starting to pick up momentum, and that's how you do it. You have to be consistent. You have to do the same thing each day. And my goal here, my goal always has been to develop a live experience for all of the people who are involved, where we could get together and really dig into issues without fear of censorship, without fear or, you know, of any external, and just really have a good time and maybe have a few laughs. Okay. Michael D. Shaw is here, as is the habit on Friday. Michael is a science blogger at Substack. Mike, how are you?
Hey, just great. You know, good to be back in LA after being gone for about 18 years.
Okay.
So, adjusting to things, but, you know, for me, the show used to be at 3, now it's at 12, but hey, it's all relative.
Exactly. Not a bad place to be, I would say. You know, if you want to deal with the crazy LA culture, why not, right?
Yeah, we're a little removed from that, but, you know, there'll be some.
Yeah.
So what are the big things on your mind this week?
Well, I mean, you sent me a note, and I did see this video of at Davos, which I've done a few programs on, including with Dr. Michael Rechtenberg from NYU, who's written a book about it. And that was an interview on the street by Rebel News following Borla,
Albert Borla.
Albert Borla, the CEO of Pfizer, and really asking him some very important questions. And he
getting no answers, by the way.
Well, you know, his reaction has been very typical of, you know, some of these school board meetings that I've been watching videos of, and it's like you don't exist. I went to one of those actually in Newton, Massachusetts, where they were implementing, and Newton, Massachusetts happens to be a city that has a pretty substantial Jewish population.
Right.
And they were implementing a program secretly in the high school that was, you know, it was more than anti-Israel. I mean, it's fine if you want to criticize Israel, but it was into like, the Jews are like, you know, killing Palestinian babies and, you know, for their blood and, you know, poisoning their wells. I mean, it was absolutely, you know, and this is in Newton, liberal progressive Newton. And the, by the way, the school committee chairman happens to be of Jewish background too. He's left that post. Now he's gone on to head up one of these ultra liberal Jewish groups. But the there were people who were there who were absolutely railing against this and passionately, and these are respected members of the Jewish community and non-Jews too, who were just getting up and saying, this is a disgrace, you have to resign, how can you do this? And they were reading from it. And I just remember the blank look on the faces. Everything gets very procedural, you know, it's like you don't exist. You know, and they're like, okay, next speaker, okay, we're finished here. Then they move on to some, you know, talking about, you know, the improved toilet seats. You know, it's like it never happened. And it's I don't know if that's like parliamentary Robert's Rules of Order or how that happens, but it's really quite bizarre that the
to me it's acting like a true psychopath.
Yeah.
That they can't really defend what they did. So now they act like it didn't happen or it wasn't their fault. Or any number of variations of that, but it is pretty sad that it got to that point. I mean, if there had been more parent involvement with school boards in years past, a lot of this wouldn't have happened.
Right.
But it had to get to the point where, to use the old expression, they finally jumped the shark. In Loudoun County, Virginia, which is close to where I used to live, that whole business with the so-called transgender guy mm-hmm. who ended up raping two girls and they tried covering it up. It's the same thing.
Right. And there's a couple of new cases of that recently.
Yeah.
And these guys kind of, you know, undressing in a lady's bathroom and just, yeah. It's really disgusting. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that even 10 years ago, they would have probably been arrested. You know, it's like, I mean, it's, you know, and yet now, like, there's nothing. It's almost like it didn't happen. You know, there's a complete stonewall. It's very strange. I mean, it's like some kind of a national hypnosis. And, you know, I think you're right. It is an absolute symptom of psychotic people on a mass scale. But as far as the Pfizer goes, it's much more serious than any of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because in this case, you have the rollout internationally of a genomic therapy or whatever it is that is untested, and that it's now being admitted by even nations like, for example, Denmark has come out, that it's causing heart disease, it's causing blood clots. I've seen these pictures of test tubes with these blood clots in them, and you know they're enormous, and they're taken out of the corpses of people who died shortly after getting the vaccine. Just today, I saw a little piece, and I can't confirm this, but apparently some of these elites at Davos and, you know, these super rich people with the Lear jets, they only want to have unvaccinated pilots.
Oh, no, you can confirm that. That story ran a couple of times.
Okay. And
the other side of that coin is that the FAA is running EKGs on pilots like all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're finding a very high percentage, unfortunately, of abnormal EKGs.
Yeah.
But it was the FAA that insisted on the vaccination. And I guess the trouble with being on the evil side was they didn't think it through. You know, it's okay if you kill random people, I suppose. But if you get to the point where now you have the possibility of pilots getting heart attacks during flight, that's not a real good look.
No, it's a dangerous. And also, I mean, speaking of the FAA, I mean, another example of this bizarre lack of, you know, candor in this is that I've been listening recently to NPR on the radio, and they did a whole segment that went on longer than usual for them. Interviewing people in the airline industry and the FAA about this recent problem with Southwest Airlines and the you know, the fact that flights aren't taking off. And they had all these experts in, and they went back and forth. They didn't take calls. Right. But there was nothing said about this at all. It was like it was completely Stalin-like, you know, airbrushed out of the picture. Nobody mentioned this, and everybody knew. You could tell.
There's fewer pilots.
And they're saying, oh, well, because there are wage differences. And they just had every excuse in the world. And as someone who was somewhat experienced at listening to people, having done talk radio these number of years, and before that, running a business where I handled employees nationally whom I never met, I only knew them by hearing them on the phone, right. I've developed a pretty good ear for knowing what people are really thinking. And you could tell that they all knew what was going on, and they all were afraid to say something about it. And it was like a complete piece of propaganda, I mean, of the worst kind, and done in such a ham-handed way, so dull, you know, so euphemistic. And, you know, it's like, why am I, you know, make sure you listen to this thing. I mean, are they fooling anybody?
Well, they think they're fooling people. They're self-absorbed enough to think so. But it's all part of the culture rot. I mean, I follow a number of these websites or YouTube sites like Nerdrotic, and there's been, your audience is probably aware of the so-called remake of Scooby-Doo, only Scooby-Doo is not in it.
It's now a lesbian. And it's
called Velma, which has been panned. It's got one of the lowest ratings ever on IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes. And the only clues you can come from is that you get a bunch of extremely neurotic writers.
Right.
What they're talking about is their own personal struggles. It's not funny. It's and the interesting thing about it is the people that do this as part of their YouTube channel were saying, I can't stand this series. I'm not even going to watch it anymore to review it for you. Mm. And of course, they relent and do. But this whole ruination of the popular culture seems to be all part of it. And it's on purpose. I mean, I read not too long ago on Gab, I think the guy's name is Andrew Tasker, who's a pastor in Minnesota, I believe, who makes the point that when people like Ben Shapiro and others talk about, look at the hypocrisy of how Trump is treated versus, there's no hypocrisy. The hypocrisy is the point. And he made the point that there's no hypocrisy here. When those riots were going on with George Floyd, that was part of the apparatus of the state.
Right.
They could have stopped it, but they didn't.
No, and it in a way, it showed that it demonstrated that Trump was actually not in control anymore. In that, in the case of Portland, Oregon, when they basically were storming the Hatfield federal courthouse, talk about an insurrection, throwing crap at it and spraying it and throwing stuff at judges and clerks as they entered and exited and laying siege to it. Trump actually sent some federal agents down there to try to arrest some people. Right. And they were, it was viciously attacked for doing this. I mean, you went off the property and all of a sudden, oh, you're a fascist. And how could you do this? And people, I remember somebody I know personally, I mean, a left winger, literally wailing over this, breaking down. Like, he do, this is so horrible. And then the other example during that was when Antifa BLM firebombed St. John's Church across the street from the White House. Talk about an insurrection. I mean, this is, they were trying to break into the White House, but St. John's Church, every president since Madison has worshiped there. It's a historic edifice. It's one of America's most revered buildings, completely firebombed. Trump goes out and he basically tries to show a little show of strength by saying, we're not going to be defeated. He goes there, he holds up a Bible. And it's weird that he was like vilified for this for reasons that are not rational. I mean, there's no clear explanation for what he did wrong. I mean, it's like, he really was losing control over the narrative, which shows that, the same people who were in control are the same people who stole the election. And if I think that the best source on that, which I cover in my book, The Biden Coup, was Molly Ball, a establishment left-wing reporter for Time magazine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, wrote an article about it about a month after the election, basically, spilling most of the beans on how they did it. So you can check
it out. She was kind of proud of it, Look at what we did for our side. And the ends justify the means and blah, blah, blah. I think Trump's problem was he didn't realize how evil the other side is.
Right.
Who was it? Hannah Arendt that talked about the banality of evil.
Of evil.
But there it is, right in front of your face.
Right. And that they believe that what they're doing is virtuous. I mean, the Nazis believed that what they were doing was virtuous.
Oh, absolutely.
When they did what they did because they felt they were purifying the human race. I mean, and they felt perfectly fine about it. They felt that they, I think anyone who commits those kinds of crimes, they have to go through some kind of a rationalization over it, that what they're doing is good, or else they couldn't do it. Because I don't think anybody actually wants to think that what they're doing is evil. But
right. And of course, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
Well, right. At the end of the day, either it's good or it's evil. And
I think the trouble is that people aren't connecting the dots. You know, why should Trump have been attacked for trying to defend the Hatfield Federal Building?
Of course. I mean, any president would have. He should have done more.
The juxtaposition of January 6th, when you had actual real insurrections going on. But I think what happens, we've talked about this before, is people seem to be hypnotized by authority figures, that somehow you can attack them, but only up to a point. You know, you can't come out and say the Biden family has been corrupt from the beginning, right? You have to sort of give out, dole out, drip by drip, these little things that are coming out. But to use inductive reasoning, connect the dots, wait a minute. This guy's as corrupt as the day is long.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to see that article written too often, because it's going to destroy people's confidence.
Let me ask your opinion about something to do with that, Mike.
Yes.
The mainstream liberal mockingbird media seems to be turning on Biden over this stuff. I mean, I saw that, what's his name, that reporter from CBS covers the White House. I forget his name, Alexander, I think. Mm-hmm. Give a report on the White House lawn where he really excoriated and attacked Biden. And I'm thinking, why? These people don't just do that kind of stuff by accident. I mean, Biden is still their guy. I mean, he's exemplifies everything that the establishment wants, somebody who is mentally impaired and who can be put up there. You know, it's kind of like on the state level, you have Fetterman is a good person to follow Biden probably as president. That's exactly what they want. So why are they doing this now?
Well, because they didn't take into account or refused to believe how corrupt he really was. They thought he was just a tottering old fool.
They didn't know about the Biden laptop and all the stuff in that. I mean, they knew, these people did know how corrupt he was.
I think it
And I don't even think we know how, they probably know a lot more than we do.
Well, what's going on is a couple of things. One is it got a lot worse than they thought. And now they're trying to pile on and dump this guy. I don't know what. So you get Kamala Harris, and even worse. Not that she's as corrupt, but she's an imbecile. But the other problem is, at some point, there has to be some credibility in the fact you're a journalist. You know, you can be biased only up to a point, and then it becomes a joke. So it might be, hey, you know what? No one's watching the news on the mainstream channels except, as Michael Savage used to call it, Upper East Side women with hysterectomies, but they're all dead. So who's watching this? I have no idea. My parents' generation, you turned on Walter Cronkite, but nobody's doing that anymore.
Right.
Who actually watches network news? I don't have a clue. You can get all the news you want, left, right, or center on the internet in seconds. Why watch a show with stupid commercials, dumb broadcasters? So they realize, hey, you know what? We've got to have something here, or it's all going to collapse. And as a matter of fact, it's starting to collapse. Hollywood can't make a movie that makes money anymore. I mean, Top Gun and God Bless Tom Cruise, but that was what? That was a sequel to another hit. But you look at all these major, major failures coming out of Disney. Yes, they're all woke. Nobody wants to see it. They're self-destructing. And no one's going to cry too many tears over it either. So maybe the journalists are looking, wait a minute, we've got to have something. But it's, I was never impressed by the intellectual level of most of those people anyway. They would tend to pick a side. And it's, if they are turning on Biden, it's taking them way too long to do so.
Oh, yeah. And I think they need to go forward. I mean, some people are saying this is, the agenda here is really to basically get rid of Biden. The whole thing broke right around the time that Biden was about to announce that he was going to run again. The establishment doesn't want
Good
that.
Good point.
And that Obama doesn't want it. He hates Biden. I mean, he used to say, if you want to fuck something up, call Biden. you know, when he was president.
I think the exact quote, Chuck, was never underestimate Biden's ability to fuck things up.
Thank you. Okay.
Which, it's funnier. That's why I brought it up.
But I think that, you know, probably Obama must be pulling some strings behind the scenes. He's got this big nerve center over there in his mansion in Washington and people coming in and out. I mean, I think that, does he want to have Mushell become president? I mean, I don't know, Marxist, like Jeff Kuna calls her, Marxist Mushell. I mean, is that it? Or either that or Kamala, who I think was his pick. And I think that, I mean, the scenario goes that they do want to, they are going to let him, pull him out of office. There's so many things on him that it's not going to be able to be sustained. And that
here's the other convenient thing.
And they'll never get rid of her because she's a black woman. She will be.
Here's the convenient thing.
Yeah.
Once you get a scapegoat, well, I mean, of course, Biden has a lot to be a scapegoat for. But now that you have a designated scapegoat, they'll throw everything on it. COVID.
Right.
The economy, every failure there is. And we'll just get rid of this guy, flush him away, and bring in Kamala as a caretaker, and then put up a credible candidate.
No, I think if she gets her foot in that door, they'll never get rid of her. She's going to be there simply for one reason only, and that's because she's a black woman. They'll just never get rid of her. Once you cross that threshold, that's it. You're done. She'll be in there for two terms and a half. And then they'll put Fetterman in for another two terms. They'll never get rid of her once she's in there, and they know it, because who can take her on? It's going to be like, you know, you want to talk about idol worship and the hero treatment. I could just see the huge posters like Mao Zedong, you know, hanging with her gigantic picture. And you know how the left does this. I mean,
well, you're right, but Republicans could put up another black female, I suppose.
It won't matter. They'll say, oh, she's not really black. Look what they did to the guy that ran against Gavin Newsom, his name, you know, the talk show host.
Right.
They said he was a white supremacist. And they got away with it. That doesn't matter. She's going to be there. It's going to be like Stalin.
But I've always said that that some of it, Larry Elder was his name.
Larry Elder, yeah. That's right.
That
white supremacist. Can you imagine
that? Right, but people don't fight back. They have this Marcus of Queensbury rule mentality, which really doesn't apply.
Well, I mean, Trump fights back, and look what happened, what they did to him. It didn't matter.
All right, but let's talk about that for a minute. He fought back, but not really, in the sense that there's a litany of people he could have gotten rid of, and he didn't. He was afraid. He was afraid. If he had brought in someone decent in the FBI, a lot of this crap wouldn't have occurred. But
he brought in that Ray and, you know, these hacks.
Yeah. So if he really was as much of a hard ass as he wanted to portray, he would have remade Washington in his image. And he didn't. So obviously you can't get rid of the entire swamp, but certainly Chris Ray was not the answer. And the people he put in Justice Department were not good. Bill Barr was a rhino from the word go.
A rotten apple. Yeah, very bad man.
So I think he would have done a lot better if he had had the strength of his convictions, which I'm not sure he ever did. He was very happy to make all these great statements at these rallies. But when the rubber met the road, let's be honest here, when the rubber met the road, he should have gotten rid of Tony Fauci, Francis Collins.
And he was warned too by Peter Navarro, who actually tried to. And he kind of believed these people. I don't know if it's naivete or I think that, you know, they as we said last time, that they massaged his ego. You know, they knew how to play Trump. I mean, these people study people's weaknesses. And, you know, Trump has a weakness in that area.
Here's the other thing. I'm just saying, this is kind of a weird analogy, but when I was a very young salesman, my company was bought out and by another group. Mm-hmm. And then I'd get there and I'd tell my wife, I don't know, this is weird. all these people are strange. They're all incompetent. And of course, the natural reaction was, well, what do you mean? You're the only guy there who knows anything? And I'm thinking, yeah. And it was, so I think what happened was, and the Enterprise failed, by the way. Mm-hmm. But in the case of Trump, he's not stupid. But imagine coming into that position, looking around the room and saying, holy cow, who are these idiots? What am I supposed to do? Can I replace everybody? He should have. He should have. But there were probably advisors around him saying, hey, you know, don't do that. That would be crazy. And
yeah, he listens to too many bad. And you have these people whispering in your ear. I mean, as I said last time, even I had one of those people when I ran for Congress whispering right in my ear like an insider. And, you know, I was told in so many words that either I had to have this guy on my team or I would be completely, they'll pull the plug. I'll have nothing. I won't.
Well, at the end of the day, was that guy helpful?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, he did get me in meetings at the Boston Globe. He got me into the paper and he actually got me some favorable media. You know, he did do a good deal for me that I would never have had done otherwise.
Right.
But he was an insider who was like, don't say this, don't say that. You can say that. You can't. And I didn't always listen to him, but, you know, he did kind of, it's interesting how they operate. And, you know, he was very good at what he did. I mean, I can't say we were friends, but, you know, I respect what he was doing. I mean, he definitely had a background in where he worked in Mayor Kevin White's administration. I mean, he was an insider. And I think that you have those people and they're kind of, they don't have any particular political beliefs. I mean, they're just.
No, they just know the system.
Yeah. I mean, they
so
just.
If someone told Trump, you know, you don't want to be a bull in a china shop here, but unfortunately that's exactly what he should have been.
Yeah, exactly.
And the history proves that he was betrayed by his own. And of course, the other side was only too happy to pile on. So,
yeah, exactly. Now, this is, speaking of which, there's an interesting story. I think that Tucker Carlson covered this, that there's a guy from back historically that has made the case that the reason Nixon was taken out of office was because he wanted to expose who had killed Kennedy. And I think that's probably true. He had met with the director of the CIA, Richard Helms.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that Nixon we've got the largest election in history. There has been no president in the history of the United States then or since who was more popular than Nixon. He got 17 million votes more than his opponent in 1972. He carried.
I think McGovern only carried the district and the state of Massachusetts.
That's right. I remember Massachusetts. They had stickers at the show. The you know, Nixon 49, America 1. This is after the impeachment started. Right. But yeah, I mean, Nixon was hugely popular, but yet he was taken out by this mysterious set of events, and he was replaced by an insider, you know, somebody who worked with the FBI, who was not elected, and who, you know, was on the Warren Commission and was basically the one who said, the purpose of this commission is to move on, not find out the truth. The American people need, as Ford said, they need closure. No, we didn't need closure. We needed the truth. Yeah. So it was very much a cover up. And that so Nixon met with Helms, Richard Helms, the head of the CIA.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I want to get to the bottom of, and I think I know who shot Kennedy, and I want to get to the bottom of it. And Helms's reaction, similar to the reaction of all these school board heads, is similar to the reaction of Borla, Albert Borla, and similar to the reactions described by Michael Glennon in his book, The Double Government, of these intelligence agents, was to just sit there and stare forward and not say anything. Just, you know, blank look in his face and no comment at all, no opinion. And then you had this guy come out of nowhere who had been a naval intelligence officer by the name of Bob Woodward, had no media experience, suddenly hired by, you know, leaves naval intelligence under mysterious circumstances. No one's ever found out what happened. And then he's hired by the Washington Post as a journalist. He had no journalistic experience.
Right.
And he meets up with this guy, Deep Throat, who now we know is Michael Felt, who was the FBI head of COINTELPRO, which was in the business of attacking political figures and groups that were not conforming to their idea of how America should be. And he basically sets up this whole scenario, and Nixon is taken out of office. So, you know, this article I read really makes this point very well. And I think Tucker Carlson talked about it, that this is why Nixon was removed from office. He was bucking this deep establishment, this, you know, that has all these secrets that at a very high level. These are the people that run this country. You know, this is who's in charge. I mean, Michael Glennon, in his book, Double Government, he says you have the Madisonians and the Trumanites. The Madisonians are the sort of the window dressing, the ceremonial government, the president, the Congress, the Supreme Court. The Trumanites are the deep state, are the intelligence. Yeah. That was set up by executive order by Harry Truman, who, by the way, expressed regret later in life over having done it. And they're the ones who actually run the show. I mean, they're the ones who, you know, kind of steer the course of events. And, you know, so that's what we're dealing with. I mean, Trump actually, like Kennedy, Trump actually thought that he was the president of the United States. He thought, I have been elected. He stated it in his inaugural in a very sincere speech. Hey, you know, I'm against the whole rotten establishment. I want to return power to the people. And you know, so that's why they took him out.
Well, the other thing going on, too, I mean, that's all true. But when people have hung around organizations as long as any of these guys, you develop a sense of noblesse oblige. I mean, how many times have you heard from friends, whatever, man, I just couldn't work in that corporate structure. I just can't be part of that. But okay, but then what about the people that are part of it?
Right.
So how does someone like Albert Bourla get to be the CEO of this huge drug company? He doesn't show any particular intelligence.
He's a doctor, is he?
I think he's a veterinarian.
Okay.
I don't think he's real bright, but he hung in there. And that was the rule, you know, for the brief period of time I spent in corporate America, so to speak, you could see this happening. You see the games that are played. You see how people advance by, you know, not making waves. And so by the time you're Richard Nixon, who's been part of this for, I think he was elected to Congress, I believe, in 1946.
Right.
So he's been around for a long, long time. It isn't in his nature anymore to fight that hard. You know, you don't want to rock the boat. Remember, Dick Nixon was the guy who did not investigate his own election in 60 because he didn't think that would be good for the country.
Yeah, and he knew he'd get another shot. You know, yeah. He said, it's not my turn. And apparently yeah. Hillary Clinton thought it was her turn, too. I mean, yeah. It's just, you know, this is kind of how the establishment works.
So I think the trouble is that these people get to some extent gelded in that they've been around the establishment. It's rubbed off. And there have been very few elected figures at that level who are true, let's call them hard asses and just want to get it done. That personality is phased out at that point.
They've just become so compromised. And I think there's yes. often a slight element of blackmail involved there. I think that I remember reading about how J. Edgar Hoover would go up to the White House and hang out with Lyndon Johnson he'd always bring a big pile of manila files with him, and they would go through all of the various scandals and peccadilloes of people in power. And they'd sit there laughing uproariously, you know, this, oh, look at this guy. And, you know, they just had the goods on everybody. So people kind of did, you know, they would do what they had to do without knowing that they could be destroyed in a minute. Also with Nixon, I mean, Nixon did early on take on one of the darlings of the establishment, that being Alger Hiss.
And won.
1948, and won. And Hiss actually went to prison, and it was a huge blow to the elite establishment. I think it was a shock. So I think that according to, who is the columnist? She's a Trump hater. I'm trying to think of her name. Mona Charon. She wrote a column.
What happened to Mona Charon?
I don't know. I think
she was at one point sort of conservative.
Right. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. She became like a Trump hater, but she did write a column. I used to follow her, and she wrote a column saying, look, Watergate was the liberal establishment was laying in wait for 20, 30 years. You know, they don't care if they do it. They didn't do it right away, but they were waiting to pull the trigger on Nixon, you know, because of Hiss. They wanted revenge. They wanted to get back, and they couldn't let him get away with that. So I think that's plausible.
No, I'm sure that's the case. And yeah. What makes it even more sick is, what did he get away with? Hiss was dirty.
Oh yeah, I mean, and Hiss was, and also Hiss was one of these classic amoral establishment figures, had no ethics at all. You know, well-to-do. You know, rose up the ranks. After he left, he was Undersecretary of State, and he was the founding secretary of the UN, right, which, you know, all the while, you know, playing footsie with Stalin. And then after leaving in disgrace, he was allowed to, he became the head of the Carnegie Institute for International Peace, which, by the way, to get up to a current event, because I'm listening a lot lately to NPR, they're all singing the praises.
I feel bad for you.
Well, it's interesting. I want to kind of pick up on what they're up to. They're singing the praises of this New Zealand prime minister, Aldeen, who,
Jacinda Ardern.
Jacinda Ardern, yeah. And I get the sense that, she's so amazing that she's leaving power because she feels that she must, it's so unusual. I think there's either a scandal going on there, because she was, you know, talk about like who was the Harvard philosopher who talked about fascism with a human face? Susan
Sontag. I don't remember the name of the guy, but she was a fascist dictator.
Yeah, Susan Sontag. She said that fascism will come with a human face, and you have these pretty relatively attractive women like Aldeen, who is doing the kind of stuff that, you know, Stalin would do, but yet doing it with such a nice veneer.
I think it was girl power too. I think she was able to get away with a lot of this because look at that girl boss, you know. Look at her.
It reminds me of the Secretary of State in Michigan, Jocelyn Benson. Corrupt as hell, but she's so pretty, and she's got this great blonde hair, and you know, she looks like the kind of woman that you'd want your son to date. You know, she's like,
well, in Jacinda's case, the comment was made that she had the ability to eat corn on the cob through a chain link fence. So, I think she resigned, hoping to distance herself from her drastic mishandling of COVID.
And I think there's two things going on. Either she's going to be getting a big job at like the UN or something, because she's loved by the internationalists, or there's a major scandal that she's covering up. I mean,
there's plenty of scandal just in the way it was handled, the number of deaths, the fact that New Zealand citizens couldn't get back into their own country. There was a lottery of getting back into your country. There were cases of her taking babies from parents because they wouldn't vaccinate them. She was terrible.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And now NPR is doing this whole weird kind of like, you know, goose stepping around, you know, just like they're doing with this awful statue in Boston. I don't know if you know about this.
Oh, yeah. The statue that everybody hates, but there are, of course, people
and you're standing out there and you can see, I mean, you know, maybe it's because I've watched people and I'm used to it. You can see that. I mean, I can imagine Martin Luther King would have been mortified. I mean, it looks like two hands holding up as who was it? The Coretta Scott King's nephew, two hands holding up a beefy penis. I mean, it's bizarre. And the Wall Street Journal said it's an example. A white supremacist couldn't have done better. I mean, it's, you know, black body parts dismembered and, you know, piled on. It's, and yet, you know, at the dedication, and even today, I'm listening to our local NPR. So they're all trying to kind of salvage it, you know, with this phony, right. Oh, it's not understood. And it's, you know.
Yeah, Emperor's New Clothes. And the commission on that was over $10 million.
Oh, it's really a disgrace. And Boston, once again, is embarrassed. It's awful. I haven't actually gone over there, but.
Well, you've seen pictures of it. What do you need?
Yikes. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have a feeling that maybe about 10 years from now, quietly, it's probably going to end up in some basement somewhere. But because it's just,
they've really failed on every monument for this guy, because there was another one where he had this, I mean, the family came out and said it was terrible.
Like Mao Zedong. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that art has deteriorated to this point. But I think it's all purposeful.
Yeah.
You know, nothing like this happens by accident. Someone had to approve this design. Who would have approved it? What kind of sick mind would have approved it?
I don't know, but it's bizarre. It's really like it's so like demoralizing to view it.
Well, I mean, the only funny thing is this is what the establishment could do. And now that they're trying, although not that heartily, but some areas are trying to defend it, as you say. There to defend?
They are defending it. And they're doing it through gritted teeth. You can see that everybody knows. You know, this is another example of watching people and seeing that they know that this is bull, and yet they're pushing forward. So anyway, back to the Borla situation. I mean, all of these things don't have an impact in the big sense. They do, but they're not destroying lives. Whereas these Pfizer vaccines are. People are dying all over the world. And I think that the people who are dropping dead in public, like I don't know if you've seen this video that's making the rounds, it's banned, but it shows people, you know, on television, you know, passing out at podiums, passing out
and dying.
Or having heart attacks. And these are only the people that we see having this, you know, the visible people, athletes, and, you know, but it doesn't account for all the people that you don't see.
Well, I mean, here's what they're going to hang their hat on. That in science, you have to have data and you have to be able to prove something. All right. So the only way you can prove this, the only definitive thing you can do in medicine is an autopsy. All right. So you would have to do autopsies on millions and millions of people and come to these conclusions, because otherwise, you're not going to be able to establish this link between this vaccine and the death. And frankly, even if you started doing animal studies, the argument could be made, well, that's a rodent, or that's a monkey, or that's a dog. And they're always going to dissemble about this. But you have to be deaf, dumb, and blind not to realize what's going on.
When the swine flu in the late 1970s, when it became quite obvious that it was dangerous and that I think six people died, the government immediately pulled it off the market. There was no cover up. It was like it was done because they could, you know, whereas now it's like they're digging in and they're keeping it.
Here's the difference, right? In the 1970s was about the end of actual science. Okay. This is a long time ago. And many of your viewers wouldn't know that back in those days, it meant something to get an article, scientific article published.
Right.
Doesn't mean anything now. There's too many journals. There's too much pay to play. And there is no more science. So you make a very good point. In the 70s with swine flu, yeah, you see a few deaths. You do inductive reasoning and say, you know what, take this thing off the market. But this situation was corrupted by so much money and so many idiots in charge. The competence level of the people in charge of public health is appallingly bad. In the 70s, it wasn't, but it was starting to deteriorate in the late 80s and 90s. And the 80s was when Collins and Fauci and these others started working their way up. So you can't, unfortunately, make the comparison. But I had this argument with Josh Bloom at SH all the time. There's no more science. It's all pay to play. Doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean anything to be published. It's all crap. Almost no said back in the 70s, you didn't even make a statement about something unless another lab repeated your results. That doesn't go on anymore.
Yet, but yet there is some real science going on. Like, for example, the mRNA therapy and CRISPR and other things that do that very well may change the gene sequence and the DNA sequence in human beings. They're talking about it right now at the Davos conference quite openly that this is the future. We're going to be able to remap the genome in people. We're going to be able to, you know, we've already done this in mice. We've remapped their DNA and we can make a mouse change the color of their fur. And we can do all these things. And, you know, so there is stuff going on. It's just and this is part of the therapy. I mean, I think that Dr. Robert Malone has recently said that there's he believes that they're now injecting cattle with the mRNA vaccine, which means it's in the food. You know, we're gonna get it no matter what, whether we're vaccinated or just everything. It's gonna be everywhere.
Well, it's very sad. I mean, when I say there's no science, of course people are doing science, but it's pay to play. You're not getting good results that are foundational. Okay.
No.
You can't say this is true because we've done this experiment and we've proven it. It's simply useless academics getting money to do useless experiments. I wrote an article for Health News Digest many years ago where I looked at dozens of NIH-sponsored studies. And what I did was I went to the guy that got the biggest grant and the guy that got the littlest grant. And the biggest grant was someone doing sexy kind of stuff. In other words, nanomedicine, stuff that maybe in 300 years may come to pass, but very little practical value. But, you know, it's like talking about space travel to 500 light years away. You know, it doesn't seem to be in the cards right now.
Right.
But it's cool to talk about.
Sure.
So, and then at the bottom was someone actually doing practical stuff about how to, you know, what type of antiviral to use for a certain disease. And the contrast was unbelievable.
Incredible. So, but here we are now with people having heart disease. Every time I read that somebody has passed away, the first thing I think of now is I wonder.
Was he that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, this guy, this actor, Jordan, somebody that, you know, was he vaxxed? I mean, you know, even I think Betty White, apparently she died 2 or 3 weeks before her 100th birthday. She had just gotten the vax. Now, I'm not saying that's why, but, you know.
Well, so did Hank Aaron. I mean, there were a number of cases where, okay, they're old anyway.
Right.
but what did they die of?
And they really needed
Betty White was 99 years old, so who cares what she did? But there's always going to be a way to dissemble.
Well, I mean, you know, we should care. I mean, this is, you know, it's like it's.
No, I'm being sarcastic.
Now, look, Mike, I mean, look, As you know, I've had the vax and my family and, you know, I begged them not to have another one. And when I say I begged them, I mean, I had to roll on the floor crying to get them not to do it. But they agreed not to do it, thank God, right. At least for now.
Not to get personal, but have you had an EKG recently?
No. I know that I've just read that if you have any predilection toward cancer, the vax can encourage that. And as I've told you, I mean, my brother was recently diagnosed with cancer and just had surgery. I mean, it's, you know, this is, he's younger than me. He's in good health. He's better. He's certainly more fit than I am. I mean, he's never been sick. And I think everybody probably has a story like this at this point. It just looks, it doesn't look right. It looks very suspicious.
Well, it isn't right, and it's not going to affect everybody.
Right.
But you might consider just having an EKG. It's not a big deal.
Right. No, I agree. What can you do, you know, practically? I mean, is there any good news out of this, or are we going to all be dead in 3 years?
The interesting thing about the heart is that, notwithstanding blockage, which in my case, I did have bypass, but it's self-repairing to a great extent. Myocarditis is serious, and there's nonsense that they were saying about mild myocarditis. I mean, what a joke, okay? But there are, in a sense, the heart is simple in that there's either plumbing issues or electrical issues. So you would probably feel better, and a lot of your viewers that have had the vaccine might feel better getting the EKG, you know.
Well, I guess that, you know, putting aside what the results are going to be, what does someone do if they have had a damaged heart, if they do have what's now being called a Pfizer heart?
Yeah, well, I'm not a cardiologist, but I will tell you that there are therapies for just about everything that can go wrong with your heart.
Okay.
There are people who have serious AFib who control it with certain drugs.
Okay.
The typical 1950s style heart attack generally had to do with blocked coronary arteries.
Right.
What would you do about it? Well, now we have bypass, but hopefully you have symptoms or mild symptoms, like in my case, that you get it looked at. But you can tweak the heart quite a bit. So it's good to look at it rather than worry about it.
I know that I'm always looking for, I love supplements. And I take green tea supplements.
Yeah.
That I don't know if they help. I mean, I take this Soul Tea. Maybe I could get them as a sponsor.
Yeah, there you go.
Steve Bannon promotes them, and I'm actually trying to get a promo code and promote them as well. But, I mean, they say that it helps reduce cholesterol and all of the other things that can cause heart disease. I mean, I don't know if it can address COVID. I mean, the COVID vaccine. But anyways, I mean, this is something that, I mean, it's troubling. I'm sorry. It's too bad we're ending on such a sad note here, but it could become a huge thing, and it could get a lot worse as time goes on. Before
it's only going to get better when the establishment acknowledges what's happening. And I can tell you that when I got into all this heart stuff, which was at the height of COVID hysteria,
right?
All the cardiologists were saying, "No, you got to be vaccinated." Well, obviously, they're not saying that anymore. But
No, it's they the are in my neck of the woods. I get notes from the hospital saying I should come in for another vaccination. And this is a major hospital in Boston. I'm not going to.
In fairness, they're going through the motions.
Okay.
But
people that might be a little less conscious of this stuff than I am might go in and get the vaccine.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not defending it. But I'm saying that the alacrity that the cardiology community had in 2021 about you got to get vaccinated, they've backed way the hell off from that. And you don't see this anymore. But, you know, the damage was done. Mm-hmm. So now they have to deal with this stuff. And they're dealing with it, although they're not publicly saying yet, well, yeah, it's a vaccine damaged this guy. But everybody knows. So I don't know how long it's going to take for this to be publicly acknowledged. I suspect that you're going to have to go through a generational thing. You know, the current management of Pfizer is going to have to be gone. And some.
But they were already building a new vaccine. They want to combine COVID and flu.
Yeah.
So they're still pushing it for children.
Yeah.
So well, you know, you're not going anywhere. They're talking about McDonald's, I think. I mean, it's part of, I mean, we could talk about the aspect to this that has to do with the world agenda policy. But anyway, that's for another.
Well, imagine the merchandising aspects of this. Okay. A product is mandated. You have no liability. The government's paying for it.
Yeah.
It's literally a license to print money.
Oh, the money is incredible. I mean, didn't McDonald's or Burger King or one of the fast food chains recently put the vaccine on the cover of their French fry wrappers? I think. No, they did.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mike, so what do you have anything coming up on your Substack?
Okay, now that I'm settled and you've seen my stark-looking office, if you look to the left or right, you see boxes piled up and so on. But we're back in California. I've got my 2 gigabyte internet connection, baby.
Cool.
So we're getting back into it. I was going to write something in time for this show. But then I realized, wait a minute, it's 12 o'clock, not 3. So
I know, it'll take a while to get into the new rhythm.
I'll just leave you with this. You keep mentioning this guy, Michael Glenn. You've got to get him on the show.
Something I really would like to. I mean, he actually spoke just before the pandemic at Wellesley College. So he's out there. And, I don't know if he and I did not see eye to eye, but he did compliment me and say, you know, even though I don't agree, I get what you're saying. I mean, you make the point. Yeah. So we'll see. Anyway, but yeah, I might contact him. That would be cool.
Yeah. Right, so next time we will do it again.
Indeed.
And
best of luck to you. Indeed. Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye.